because I too stomp off to take angry showers.
Yeah, that's what killed me, was that shower shot. Like, in like the tradition of what Folgers commercials everywhere, singing about your brother in the shower. Just...
Welcome to another episode of Glee on the Rocks. I am Emily.
I'm Bea.
So today we have a guest with us, and there's only one guest that we could have for this episode, and I will let her introduce herself.
Well, I'm mostly just Gigi these days, but back in the day it was Neve.
And really, who else are we going to have to talk about season 3, episode 15, Big Brother? And this is the Cooper Anderson extraordinaire episode. It was directed by Eric Stoltz, written by Michael Hitchcock. That's only important because Eric Stoltz does some good episodes. Mm-hmm. And I don't think Michael Hitchcock has a brother, which is a point that I will come back to if I remember it.
I did not know that Eric Stoltz directed this. I'm just now finding out, what is it, like 20 years later, that Eric Stoltz directed this episode. That's blowing my mind.
Right? And he does some good ones, too. Mm-hmm. In the pantheon of Glee episodes, Eric Stoltz really kind of raises the bar, as we will see. And I'm sure that they weren't going to let Matt Bomer go directed by a nobody. So
that's fair.
The rundown of this episode is, while the group waits for news on Quinn, Blaine is none too pleased to see his big-shot Hollywood actor brother, Cooper. Caveats a couple there. Big shot in Hollywood.
Mm. I'm holding in laughter. I'm genuinely holding it
Not,
in.
Debatable. I mean, like, debatable, yeah. Which, we were briefly discussing, like, how do we even talk about this episode so that it's not an hour and a half simply of Cooper Anderson, and I don't know that we should try not to do that. Because I've been looking forward to rewatching this episode for far too long.
Yes.
And that is simply because of how much I love Matt Bomer and Coop. And I feel like if anyone knows our fandom backgrounds and listens to this podcast, they know why.
No, they may not know why, because I didn't find out about this until very recently, and I knew of all the players in this game at the time. So this may be new information to people.
Yeah, so Gigi and I did the Ask the Ander Bros Tumblr blog.
Which, back. I mean, I remember when we started that, we're like, this is going to be a casual thing. Ask blogs don't last past the first few weeks. People get bored of it, but holy crap. It was, it exploded.
It did. Yeah, it really did. And I wonder if that's just because people were so desperate for more Cooper.
Oh, yeah.
That it maybe it's like, was it us or was it Cooper?
I think the spirit of Cooper took over at one point. Because it did. Some of those answers, I've actually gone back a couple of times to have a look. I don't remember writing half that shit. I'm just like reading through like, was this me? What? Was this Emily? I
don't remember. Yeah, a bit of a fugue state. I definitely got vaguely in trouble at work doing that because it was a little time consuming at times. Yeah. And I was so bored at this job that was like just a desk job that I would do some of the work at my job. And I was not great at hiding the bright blue Tumblr.com screen.
Super subtle. Like,
it was not subtle at all. And neither were the people that we have caught reading the blog back in the day out in the public.
Oh, I remember you telling me about a guy. Was it at an airport? There was a guy saw over his shoulder reading. That was hilarious. Wow.
It's my favorite is that there was this like 30, 40 something year old dude in a business suit at an airport reading the blog. And I wanted so desperately to be like, why are you looking at this? Like, whose dad are you? What are you trying to learn? Are you trying to figure out, like, what your daughter's into?
Yeah, which,
you
know,
just
to be
really
fair,
into Matt Bomer.
We were pretty timid in terms of what your kid could secretly be reading. One of the things I will say, going back and looking at the blog, I don't know how I was ever that funny or if I'll ever be that funny again. Like, how did that happen? Where did that come from?
It was pretty good. Inquiry lines.
It was really good. We had a great time on that vlog. I mean, it took a lot of time because I would sit there in Photoshop and edit the handwriting images for every single ask. And in the end, we had to cut back on the days that we were doing it because we had hundreds and hundreds of them and I just did not have the time.
No. Didn't have the time, and then there was really a worry of like overdoing it to the point where the funny went away.
Oversaturation, yeah.
Yeah, the oversaturation, and also just like it's hard to tell a joke when you're not like a comedian. Like it's hard to be funny.
We had the blessing as well of as soon as it started to get to the point where it would have gotten old, we introduced Kurt on Sundays, I think it was.
Yeah.
Sunday we'd have Kurt join in with them, and that blew up as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep, little threesome action on a very tepid scale.
Yeah.
Yep, that helps.
We really towed the line with the drama in that. Because we had a couple of I want to say episodes, we had a couple of posts where they would like have a fight or something and everybody would re-vlog it going, oh no.
Yeah.
And we'd just be sitting at our desktops like drinking it down like, yes. Uh-huh.
I don't know about you, but like that sustained me on an ego level for a good while. Yeah. It was hard to admit at the time, but now that I'm an old fuck, it's like, yeah, that was actually a nice ego boost of, hey, you're kind of good at something right now.
Yeah.
Here's something that people like.
This audience is actually reacting to stuff I'm writing. What's happening?
Especially because I'm sure, I mean, I don't know that you had this as much, or maybe, and B, I'm sure you know, is the same feeling of like, you put a lot of work into a fic and then you post it and nothing happens.
Mm-hmm.
And the immediate gratification of putting up an Ask the Anna Bros post and then watching the notes is like, well, at least something that we're doing is, which is, it's a weird creator conundrum, right? Like, I feel like creators in fandom never want to tell people that they really want the notes.
Yeah.
I think that's a hard, it's hard to admit that when you put something out there, you really do want the feedback.
Right.
There's a whole phenomenon of that. You post something and then sitting there hitting refresh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then pause and then hitting refresh again. And you feel pathetic, but you need
it. You
do.
You feel pathetic. And you're just waiting, like, is someone gonna like it? And is someone important gonna reblog it? And then that'll get other people? Will they tell me that they like me? Will someone
just out of nowhere, you just put up something like, okay, this time I'm going to post it and I'm going to walk away. And you never do.
Never. Never. I'm going to read every reblog. I'm going to read every tag.
That's the other thing. Tumblr introduced the ability to read all the comments on posts and all the tags on posts way after this. So we would actually physically have to go and
one by one.
Look at all of the reblogs one by one because we were that needy.
Yep.
Good times.
But it was good times because it really was like, it felt good to have something people liked. It was, you know.
I mean, that's the one thing I will say about like, there's a lot of it that messed me up because there was a lot of backlash to me in specific. But that era, that Glee era, that Neef era for me, there was so much that was just like, the biggest ego trip, because for the first time ever, I've been writing fanfic since I was in single digits. Like I used to get Star Trek zines read to me for my bedtime stories.
That's how it should be.
That is how fandom my house is. My mother is like a first generation Trekkie. She was part of the original Sass Trek crew, but like I've been in fandom for a very long time and I've been writing fic for a very long time. And it wasn't until Glee fandom that I actually became one of those writers where everybody's like, oh, this one's by Neef. What that does to somebody who has never had recognition, it's like everybody's like, oh, it's she's buying her own hype, it's gone to her head. It totally did. Like at the time I was like, no, I'm so humble, I would never. But no, it totally went to my fucking head. It absolutely did.
How could it not though? Like
exactly,
like it's human to just be like, oh, someone likes the thing that I did.
Yeah.
I have this problem just like baking. Like if you don't tell me that you fucking love this cookie,
it's one of those things. I think it's I don't know that I say that phrase a lot. It's one of those things. It's one of those things I keep saying. But it's absolutely like when it comes down to that period of Glee, there were so many writers and there were so many creators that were like, I remember there was a few that were like making GIFs, and there were a few that were making the art and stuff. And everybody, as soon as something new came out from one of them, there'd be like siren alarm bells all over my dashboard. And oh, it was one of the best times in fandom.
Yeah. I can't remember who the GIF maker is, so but
Blaine's Pizza.
Yes. Yeah.
Was one of them. I remember.
Yeah. It really felt cohesive for a brief moment in time. Like, so we're in the middle of season 3, and this feels like the center of the Glee fandom, where it hasn't, there's enough people doing stuff every time, every week, that the conversation's flowing. And sure, there are some bad apples and shitheads, honestly, and we can talk about them later. And like,
original song through the end of season 3 was the golden era of Glee.
It is. And it's funny because the episodes kind of feed into it. Like, these rewatching is like, oh, some of these season 3 episodes are really good in the Glee scale, right? Like, not in a
regular scale, on the Glee scale.
On the Glee scale. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't compare them to, I don't know, cinema, but that's unfair because there's movies that people call cinema that I think are crap. So, you know, but on the Glee scale of good, these are like some core episodes, and this is the time that the fandom was really like in it and working, and this was like the boxing project.
Oh God.
So it's like there was stuff happening for good or for bad, but they were doing it out of boxing. I know. But it did.
Project, I remember so many things from, like, especially this year, from the season 3 year. There were so many events that happened that my brain could only like catalog so many. So when another one comes up, it's like retrieving files. Oh God, retrieving files.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to like dig back into the memory of, was that this time?
Yeah. Yeah.
That was this season, which is sort of how I felt about Big Brother, was like, wait, we're in season. Okay. That's now. And it comes after the mid-season hiatus. So there's Quinn's accident, and there's a cliffhanger, and we're like, what's going on? And there's going to be a guest star, and it's going to be Blaine's brother, and who the fuck is it going to be? It's Matt Bomer. Beautiful, piercing. Yeah, there was, for like maybe a week straight.
I think.
Probably more.
I mean, I was a huge fan of Matt Bomer from White Collar. Absolutely massive fan of him. Absolutely head over heels in love with his, everything that he does as an actor. His choices.
As you should be.
It's just flawless. And I think there's a line in this where Sue just has to stop and tell him.
Because you, sir, are a Disney prince.
She has to like reiterate that, because Matt is. And
he is.
His entire embodiment is walking Disney prince. But I remember when we got the announcement, and it was months until the episode. And I think I mentioned this to you earlier, Emily, the amount of time we spent coming up with like theories and what we wanted to happen, and looking for, like, vlogging on every morning desperate for set pictures. Mm-hmm. And then we got one, and it was a group picture, and we all just cropped the two of them out. Just Blaine and Cooper cropped out.
Just like, and just mush them together. Like, you're good. Just get in there.
God, I remember the wait for this episode felt like forever. And I was so excited.
Well, and casting Matt Bomer requires thinking that Darren Criss and Matt Bomer look alike.
Yeah.
Vaguely. And in some regards, like, you can kind of see it, right? Like, some jaw thing happening, but it's more, I think it was more about their interactions as two people.
Yeah.
That you were like, no, I'm here for this.
Suspension of disbelief and Glee are kind of like, you know, hand in hand. It's a hand in hand situation. It is a marriage. Mm-hmm. Suspension of disbelief. And I think it was Brad Falchuk who did an interview where every single time somebody brought up an inconsistency, he would laugh and say,
but it's Glee.
Yes.
And that sums Glee up to me. Just like every time you mention something absolutely ridiculous, just laugh and say, it's Glee. It's
like, wait, Blaine's brother's 20 years older than him, but it's Glee. It's fun.
I know. And in the flashback, they're maybe 12 years apart or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. There is plot to this episode.
There's about 20 plots to this episode. There's
a lot of plots.
Lots of continuing plots.
Lots of continuing plots. And the main one is really not Cooper, which is a shame for us in talking about this episode. But the main plot is that Quinn Fabre has not died in a tragic texting car accident and is back in school in a wheelchair.
And has absolutely not one cut, scratch, or bruise on her, which is magical.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
She's too beautiful for cuts and scratches. She's just, they just reflect off of her like some kind of unicorn.
Yeah. And it really had to be that the truck was traveling very fast to even hurt her a little bit, that it didn't just ricochet off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. we get some more.
Barry, yes, I wrote that down. Mm-hmm. I see why people were shipping it so hard. They were like comforting each other, holding hands. Like, Rachel is fucked up that Quinn got so hurt.
Like, yeah.
She's not in a good place.
She certainly cares a lot more about that than she does about her boyfriend.
Yeah.
So there's that to contend with.
I mean, she literally did not marry Finn because of Quinn.
Would that have been such a Rachel move to still get married when your friend has almost died in a car accident? Like, well, we're already here, so we should.
No, I think some maximum drama, call it, because I mean, she's all about maximum drama. Calling off the wedding made sense because now she gets to have another moment.
That's true.
About her once again.
She gets to put the wedding dress on twice.
It's especially confusing because in the episode before this, like, Finn's literally like, we have to go right now as Rachel is sending the text that Quinn is answering when she gets hit by the car. So does Quinn immediately call Rachel and be like, I'm in a car accident and can't feel my feet?
Yeah.
Or like, how did that timing work out? You know, because ostensibly if she gets hit by a car in such an accident, like, you would not call Rachel Barry first thing. Maybe.
Maybe Rachel programmed her phone.
Maybe. I feel like, but I just feel like in real life, they would have went ahead and got married. She would have just assumed that Quinn wasn't coming.
Yeah.
The text. Quinn realistically does not call Rachel or anyone there. She called her parents or 911.
Quinn's emergency contact is in fact Rachel.
Right. And
the medics are there like, who do we call? Rachel Barry.
Call Rachel Barry. She can't get married.
Well, that's the other thing, is that maybe that's why Finn was so insistent that day to get married, is that he knew if Quinn showed up, I'm going to call it off.
Yeah, Rachel would be like, for some reason I look at Quinn and I don't want to marry you anymore. I don't know why.
I'm just not feeling it.
Just get this feeling.
Well, she seems to be feeling pretty good. And right now, I'm not great at segues. I'm sure that's pretty obvious.
No, you do a great job.
But there's actually some interesting in Glee world stuff with Quinn and her wheelchair experience and Artie and his wheelchair experience.
Yes.
Which I thought was weirdly adult for Glee, even if, I mean, they just kind of touch on it. They don't dig all the way into it in this episode that...
Mm-hmm.
Quinn is very much like, this is not who I am. This is not my body. This is not me. And Artie, despite his one day of rewalk Christmas, is like, this is me. And even though they sing two whole songs together, there's a disconnect between their experiences with the chair.
I just want to say, I'm big about like proper disability representation in shows, and it's one of those things for me that I wanted so desperately to be proud of their disability representation, but they did open the entire episode with I'm Still Standing.
Yeah, they did. Don't you know I'm still standing better than I ever did, looking like a true survivor.
Oh, the height of irony in these song choices.
Oh God, I want to look at it like, I love the ramp scene. I love her getting up the ramp.
Yeah, I like that too.
That was fantastic. But it's still Glee.
Mm-hmm.
No, I feel it's so funny to sometimes Glee just uses music as a comedic device when it shouldn't have been necessarily used as a comedic device. And I feel like this is one of them. Well, they just picked, okay, well, they just picked Stan after Karofsky attempts suicide.
I know.
Like, come on, Stan, you're going to run again. I'm like, he's in the hospital.
I know.
Same thing with this one. They're like, even when they sing Up, it's like, we're going to get yourself aligned with your spine. I was like, did someone fucking Google song with spine lyric and pick that one? Like, I just think yes. They did. So we're just going to sprinkle some irony in our song choices. Like, she's in a wheelchair.
You have to hope it's irony.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, you have to hope it's irony and not that they thought that that was actually a great uplifting choice.
Yeah.
Inspiring for everybody out there in a wheelchair. Oh, God.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, the ramp was one of my notes, was like, hey, a moment of actual institutional issues faced by people in wheelchairs.
Yes.
That there's this fucking steep-ass ramp that I know I couldn't power myself up.
Which Glee used to touch on a lot. There was a lot of plots about, like, Artie's wheelchair, you know, keeping
them from... There was a whole bake sale.
Yes. Like, they needed a special bus, and they needed, you know, to perform on stage in a certain way. And, like,
mm-hmm.
So I'm really glad that they had Artie kind of mentoring Quinn. Like, I do think that was something that needed to happen. I feel like a lot of things in this episode, like, people actually had conversations that they needed to have, which is so rare in Glee. Like, I
think
so many episodes where I'm like, why didn't these two characters have a conversation? That doesn't make sense. So this was a really good one for that. But I totally agree with what you're saying, Emily, about like how adult it is and how they kind of stop themselves from going deep enough about it, because like clearly Artie was feeling uncomfortable with like the fact that she's able to separate herself from this wheelchair, and he doesn't have the same like privilege to do so. And maybe in 2012 we just didn't have the language yet to like talk about that in a better way. But yeah, he really didn't get the chance to say like, hey, fuck you, like this is I'm like,
yeah,
you are coming from this place of privilege to be able to separate yourself, like maybe it's temporary, but for now, like this is who you are, and that's not a bad thing. Like you're acting like it's a shameful thing.
And like, how would you feel if it was permanent the way it's permanent for me, for Artie?
Yeah.
Like, what are you saying about Artie when Quinn's joy is that it's not gonna last?
Yes.
And the entire thing, like, for sure, she's sitting there going, you know, I will be out of this by X time. I will overcome this kind of thing. And he's sitting there going, you're going to overcome my entire life.
That his life is something that needs to be overcome rather than he's in, like, I guess an award-winning Glee club. And he's had several hot girlfriends. Like, I don't know, he's doing all right. What about his life? Right. Like, is Artie unhappy? Maybe, but we haven't delved into Artie's life outside of season one, right? When we had a little more about his feelings in the chair, but he doesn't seem, he's not heartbroken over his life at the moment. Mm. But it's, you know, Glee just gets so close sometimes.
Right.
They get so close to like a thing that you want to root for and be like, yes, you're about to say something really important and meaningful. Oh, there's the cliff.
I remember like really vividly right after the first season, Lea Michele was doing an interview with the guy. I can't remember his name. The guy that plays Sheldon from Big Bang Theory. Sheldon.
Jim Parsons.
Yeah, she was doing an interview like as a part of the Emmys, and she's going on about at Glee we have the best writers and we can do this and this and that, and he's literally laughing his ass off next to her. He's laughing so hard, and I'm sitting there going, yeah, that's about right.
Yep. Like, do you though? Do you I mean, I know you have to lie in interviews, but let's find a lie that's almost believable. Do you know what the writers did do in this episode though, is they remembered David Martinez.
Yes. I noticed that. I was like, hold on.
I know. I had to make a point of it. I was like, ah, they remembered a guest star two episodes later. My God.
I did love the clarification. He was Puerto Rican. Sue is just absolutely hopeless.
I just love her. I do, even though she's about to give birth to an adult.
That's true. Sue was in rare form in this episode in a good way. I'm like, yes, this is the Sue I signed up for. This is the Sue who's like a great villain, like a kind of an anti-hero. I love it.
Like, I wanted that for most of the series. The same Sue we got in the pilot yelling through the megaphone. That's what I meant to come back, because she was flawless. But I forgot that Coach Roz existed before I watched
it. She's great.
I'd forgotten about that. And the entire monologue she gives about literally, you know, what is it, you know, when you're older than God. And she's talking to Sue.
And you know what else is going to stand? You're a fully grown adult baby. When he pops out of your birth canal, before he hurries off to the high power law firm where he has just made partner. So take your Centrum Silver and your old ass and find a new dream.
Her doctor's going to have to clear the bats out of her womb.
Yeah.
Her baby with its job as a partner at a law firm. It's so good.
And they're not cruel
with someone like Roz. Like, I really, we've touched on this in another episode, but I love it being an adult who has this same, like, very sharp wit and able to, like, take somebody down. Like, I love it.
I do too. And that they're funny lines without being horrendously cruel.
Right.
Like, there's a couple times where she talks about Sam, and you're like, okay, let's back off the body shaming just like a smidge, and let's focus that on an adult. But they're funny. Like, her baby rants are fucking funny.
I will say, I think Sue dropped a line about Sam this episode, the Kentucky Fried Stripper, that I had to laugh.
Yep. I think my favorite Sue line from this, though, is,
Mr. Schuster needs at least one adult friend.
Friend, yes.
Like, right, he does. They're just, they were snappy this time, and her lines to Cooper were amazing, because,
and that felt so much like just Jane having so much fun with Matt too.
Yes, and everyone trying to keep a straight face while doing this. I don't know
if it was in the script or if Matt did it when he walks up to her in the classroom and just kisses her on the mouth when she introduces her. I really hope it wasn't in the script and the Matt just winged it, because that would have been magical.
The look on her face seemed pretty genuine to me.
What's great too is if you do it once, you've got to do it for all of the takes.
Yeah. If we've learned anything, it's don't eat tomato. Like, I think that was from Firefly, Nathan Fillion doing a take over and over again where he had to eat one piece of tomato.
Over and over. That's why Blaine is just gently cutting his salad with a knife and fork instead of eating it.
Yeah,
Darren learned that lesson on this show.
Knife and fork. I wrote that down. This episode is really the one that launched a million gifts, but that especially just endures. I feel like I've read that in so many fics of Blaine, like, eating a salad with a knife and fork.
Yep. Just gently cutting it, properly holding a knife and fork.
Yep.
And that's how I eat salad, personally. Top of the morning to you.
Oh, God, the accent. I want to know. I genuinely want to know if he just said, can I just do the worst accent I can
do? Can I just do it? Yeah. I mean, I like to think that they knew they had Matt Bomer. They knew they had a talented actor who was both serious and comedic. And they were just like, go, just do something, you decide, and we'll fit it into the episode. Like, who decided to call Blaine Squirt?
Yeah.
Is that just because Matt knows that Darren's kind of short? Like, is that what's happening here? There's an actual plot around Cooper Anderson showing up, and that is, well, I mean, I think it's just to have Matt Bomer as a guest star on the return from the mid-season hiatus to make sure the viewers are coming back in,
because that's gonna get you ratings, bringing in the Matt Bomer. It's like a bomb, because they advertised the hell out of it too.
They
it
really was did.
Guest star Matt Bomer is in every single ad.
It was in absolutely everything, and if you've got that, you milk it. But plot wise Cooper has returned to Lima, where I guess he was also born, to dig into his roots 30, 35, 40 years ago, to dig into his salt of the earth roots because he's got a big audition coming up.
And because next season's commercials have intense, gritty character stuff.
Yes, yes, his freecreditrating.com commercials. Know your score, freecreditratingtoday.com.
Savings. That is the best 5 seconds
it is.
There's ever been on Glee.
Yeah,
the jingle.
It's perfect. The face is perfect. The fact that he is not a world famous Hollywood actor, but sort of is, but isn't, is great. Like, they could have gone where he really was like an A-list star, but they, what is he, like a B-list star? If people actually know who he is, but his biggest celebrity is the freecreditrating.com commercial.
I feel
it's
like
one of my
like...
favorite like recurring jokes about Lima is the fact that everybody does react to him like he is just this giant star because he did one commercial. Like Kurt's face when he realizes who his brother is flawless.
Okay, but I see this as like, and they actually mention Flo, like the progressive Flo from all the commercials. Like if I found out she was from my hometown and she was like coming to my hometown, I would probably lose my shit too. Because in some ways we feel closer probably to people who are on like commercials and stuff like that than we do.
You
like,
see them actors. All the time.
Yeah, they feel more familiar and more approachable maybe than like Brad Pitt or someone.
I don't know, jaw like Matt Bomer's, does that feel approachable if that's your credit.com guy?
I mean,
at least Jake from State Farm.
Right, Jake from State Farm. I mean, they definitely revere him, that's for sure. He's giving them the most terrible acting advice, and they're like, duh, I knew that all along. Like
the acting masterclass is like a step above. In terms of like Glee, classic Glee scenes, the acting masterclass, I've been in D&D games where that has been referenced. Like, I kid you not, I was playing as a dungeon master and they were searching for a hostage and I had one of the bandits dress up as the hostage. So he was wearing a dress and they'd killed him and somebody came out.
But things are serious. A man in a dress is dead.
In the middle of a D&D game and we all collectively lost it. It was freaking fantastic.
There's little as enduring for me as a man in a dress is dead. No, she's dead. This is her son. That one.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because they're both dead. We can unpack that later. But like,
we're gonna have to work on that one.
Yeah, I'm gonna dig into that psyche. But that line is just, and it like is thrown away. It doesn't. It's not like important. It's just so funny. Yeah.
Just the entire thing with turning into like, you know, the poses and everything that he does when he's in front of them and how invested they all look and how
they're
done
so
with
into it.
Like, it is comedy gold.
Well, and his first intro was his
Namaste.
is performing with Blainers, Hungry Like the Wolf / Rio. Which is definitely Kurt's wet dream come to life.
Yeah.
Everything about that performance.
You're also handsome and good.
Yeah, you're also handsome and good.
It's just flawless.
Everything about that performance where, like, the choreography definitely looks like something two kids put together.
Yeah. Oh, God, doesn't it?
Like, it's not great. It's not good choreography, but they were children.
I genuinely hope that was meant like to come across like that. Like this is obviously a routine that they have done since they were kids.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, if not, sorry to the Zach Woodley. Yeah.
Apologies, but, Zach.
Apologies. I like to think that Zach is good enough to plan that. And like he tries to ruffle Blaine's hair and it doesn't go anywhere. It's so shellacked.
They probably had to edit out like the crunching sounds.
Yeah, yeah. Santana's aghast face in the background, glorious. Just pure, like, I hope, I, you know, filming with Glee, we know, was bananas, right? Like, in a week, they would be learning choreography and filming scenes, but also learning and recording the songs while they were doing all of this. And yeah, I just like to imagine that there were times when, especially in the choir room, where the other cast didn't know what was going to be performed in front of them. So it was kind of like a new, can you imagine if you're the cast and it's like Darren and Matt walk out and do that performance for the first time in front of you?
I would react just like they did. Like they were losing their minds.
Losing it. And poor Sugar fell in love again.
Bless. I will say the one thing about this episode that is Vanessa Lange's is criminally underused.
She is.
So true. But she is always...
Anything that she's in, she should be front and center.
Yes. I know her back hurt when she was on this show because she was like background work. Like she was pulling all the weight. Like anything that happened, her face is the face that you go to. Ugh,
yep. Oh, yeah.
Such a queen.
I definitely did not appreciate her as much the first time around. And we've talked about this before where like the Klain goggles were so big I didn't appreciate some of the other characters. And in this episode, the Cooper goggles were like a helmet.
Astronomical.
Just so at least this time I could once in a while look at other people who weren't Matt Bomer's piercing blue eyes.
It was so hard to look away. It's like headlights. It's so hard.
Said Darren. But yeah, I just love it. And his acting class. The problem with Cooper and Blaine in this episode really is the intro to Fighter song.
Oh, God.
Is, I think, the failure of this episode is that we have to listen to Darren's intro.
How did Matt not just lose his mind watching Darren do that?
Maybe that's why they just hold on Darren instead of Matt. It's that he couldn't do it.
Because I always watch his face instead of watching Darren just for the reaction. Well,
Yeah, they just I got embarrassed rewatching that scene actually until we got to some of the other stuff in it because I too stomp off to take angry showers.
Yeah, that's what killed me was that shower shot. Like
shot is the worst one.
In like the tradition of what Folgers commercials everywhere singing about your brother in the shower.
It is the first of the two homoerotic incestuous breakup songs.
Like deeply inappropriate songs to sing about your brother, volume one.
Yeah. And as someone with three brothers, of all the song choices, like why Fighter? Is it just to get Darren boxing again?
Yeah. And just to have his brother watching him casually from the hallway, just concernedly watching him.
Just peeking around the corner there a little bit.
As you do when you're, older than God and in the middle of a high school, you're going to look at the men's locker room.
Well, in Lima, sure.
I feel like whoever picked the songs for this episode was just the most literal person ever, because I think you're exactly right. Like, it's just the boxing thing that's now a staple of Blaine's personality in season three.
Yeah, only in season three, though.
Yes.
One of my favorite things is when, like, somebody makes a music video for a TV show and they put a very literal clip to lyrics. Like, if there was a Stargate music video set to a Dido song, and every single time the line, "No earthly ships will ever bring him home," there was just a shot of spaceships every single time. And I'm just, I love it. I love that kind of literal. And I think whoever picked the music for this particular episode was like, how literal can I get?
They were like, he's a fighter, you guys.
Yeah.
And after all that you put him through, get it? Because they're clashing. This only time that we've met these characters, they really need to hammer home that they butt heads about something. Blaine's just jealous, and I feel that as a petty person.
Yeah.
So like, the fact that his anger with Cooper is mostly jealousy, and I guess that he wants to spend more time with his brother who hasn't lived in the same town in God knows how many years.
Yeah.
But like as a deeply petty person, I feel that. I just wouldn't sing about it.
Like with somebody... I have a brother that is much, much older than me. Like the age gap is almost the same. And one thing I will say, they threw in so much physicality for the two of them, like walking down the hallway with his arm around his shoulder. There was so much physicality, got a brother that is kind of semi-estranged like that, that you don't see very much, you're just not like that. I think that was largely Matt and Darren.
Oh, yeah. Maybe that's our mini episode, is just what was up with Matt and Darren?
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, I absolutely loved the physicality because I'm such a huge fan of these two, but it's Glee. Like, there was a lot of marks that they missed in this, that in terms of the realism.
Yeah, which is why I don't think the writer has a brother. Like, the shit that they say to each other, especially at the end after homoerotic incestuous love song number two, Somebody That I Used to Know, which, while amazing, is way too gay for two brothers. The line that Cooper says is like,
"We're not just brothers, right?"
Like,
Oh, and there's a freaking pause. There is a delay. The pause.
Is this like an acting choice with Matt where he's just staring into Darren's eyes and he forgets that they're brothers for a moment? Or like, what's happening? Yeah.
Like, on one level, I deeply appreciate this, but on the other level, no.
Yeah, for me personally, hell yeah. Me as a viewer of a TV show watching two brothers, like, actually, if you could not say that, that would be great.
One of my favorite Glee artists from back in the day, Kendrick and Draw. They are, like, they transcend in terms of the Glee comics they did after every episode. And I remember vividly the one after this one was about this. It was about the kind of weird homoeroticism going on between these two. And it was hilarious.
I feel like, I mean, good actors are good actors, but sometimes you just can't contain like raw energy, and it kind of bled through a couple times here. And I say that proudly. I say that without shame. They'll never hear this, probably.
Or you never know. Yeah, Matt Bomer listens every week.
Well, you know, if he does, he could really come on and discuss the rehearsal process.
Yes.
Or something.
The audition video, which I will get to at one point.
Yes.
Oh my God. Because I'm pretty sure that was the two of them. I'm pretty sure the two of them said, let's film this.
Yeah.
Why not?
Especially, so like, it's not even a deleted scene. They're in costume, but like Darren's not completely in costume. He's in a sweatshirt. Like, we'll link this too, because if somehow you haven't seen the Cooper Anderson Michael Bay audition tape, it is the kind of Glee that never quite happens again. Like, I can't think of the other guest stars who took time to film. Professionally film, not like on a phone, but professionally film extra footage with the actors just for fun. In character.
That's what it is. Like, it's absolutely for funsies. And you can tell that the two of them were like on set going, probably revving each other up. Like, do you want to do it? We should do it. We're totally going to do it. And they just found a room somewhere and a camera to do this.
Yeah, definitely. And it's truly glorious. And that is. That helped feed fandom, I think, at least for us, of just like, here are two people deeply in love with each other on a professional level, enjoying the week that they have. And I'm sure knowing that Matt Bomer was not going to return, because the guest stars never fucking do unless they're Christian Chenoweth.
But we were frothing at the mouth after this episode. Like, the amount of Cooper content that we got out of this one, like, 42 minutes. And really, not even 42 minutes because of all of the different plots.
But, that's true. Because it's also senior ditch day, but who gives a fuck about that when you've got Cooper happening in the background? Imagine the other stuff.
Little moment that I loved, which was when Teen Jesus comes and rejoins them. You've got a twig in your hair, yeah, right? And then he actually does. And it's just like, oh, thanks. It's such a cute moment.
Yeah, it's cute and chill, and he's just so. I mean, everyone in the Glee Club is kind of an asshole, except for Teen Jesus.
Yeah.
He's just too chill to care about most things.
He's like also kind of an alien.
He's a little bit of an alien, yeah.
Keeping a track of like the volume of plot. So we got Senior Ditch Day. We have Cooper comes to town. We have Quinn is recovering. Teen Jesus is back.
Yes.
Sue is giving birth.
Yes.
So there's at least five plots currently running. Oh, and the pool and the Puck pool and pool cleaning Finn. And Rachel's feelings.
Yes. And that Roz Washington has been made co-coach of the Cheerios because we're discriminating against pregnant old ladies.
Yeah, that was fucked.
Seems kind of realistic, though.
Yeah, definitely realistic. I mean, we still live in America, unfortunately. no national guaranteed maternity or parental leave. Love
I'm
it.
Just going to sit back here and smile in Australia.
Yeah, you're privileged.
Listen. Anyway, we can complain about the American system of everything next time.
The trauma of the American experience, yeah.
Really, though, I mean, welcome to the fall of Rome. I don't know. I was just reading my notes of, like, why doesn't Cooper ever come back with, like, 12 A's in it?
Not even for the wedding or anything.
It's not even. Okay. These are the questions that I need answered about Glee in general. Why would you bring a guest star as a family member? You could have brought Cooper as just like the freecreditrating.com guy who was returning to his old high school to do exactly the same thing without them being brothers. And then when he never returns, you don't have to be like, okay, but that's a family member of one of the main characters. Like,
he could have been Blaine's uncle. That would have been slightly unbelievable.
He could have been Blaine's uncle. Yeah.
And then I want to know, deep down, is Gina Gershon his mother, or what is going on there? Like, because she's Blaine's mother. Yeah. Mm.
So maybe Gina Gershon is Cooper's wife, and Blaine is their child, and Blaine is actually his son, not his brother, and that's why he's extra awkward. I don't. That probably ruins a lot of people's fic, though.
We see, like, two members of Blaine's family, and neither of them have any kind of Asian heritage as well. Like, let's just fill this family with white people. Why not?
Yeah.
Why?
Glee really did not bother trying to incorporate Darren's heritage into the show. Which, I mean, if they had tried, I'm sure they would have made it fucking awkward.
Yeah, so that's probably a godsend right there.
You know, there's still hope because, what, Cooper's way older than him. His mom, okay, she's not Asian, but we never see the dad. He and Cooper could have different dads.
That's true. And
that's just some fanon to hold on to.
Yeah, we'll just cling to that.
Yeah.
Blaine's actually adopted.
Maybe.
From a bad situation.
I mean, Mama Anderson's hot. Like, I could believe that she was, like, married and then husband something happened. And then, and that would make even more sense why Cooper and Blaine never really bonded. It's a whole nother layer. They don't have the same dad.
It is interesting when your brothers have a different parent.
Right.
Although, apparently, I do love the flashbacks we do get of Cooper and Blaine. Blaine is, like, what, 4 years old?
He just learned how to walk a few years ago.
Yeah. So cute. And he's still wearing the bow tie, and Cooper's putting him through full-on dance moves. Like, because I know if I was a teenager and had a tiny, tiny infant brother, I would make him dance.
You definitely put him in a bow tie as a toddler and slick back his hair. Okay, the slick back toddler hair really fucking annoyed me, though, because, as you know, Blaine's slick back adult hair pisses me the fuck off, and that they were trying to retcon that his hair was always like that. I don't think so. I saw season two.
Between Junior Gate and the hair, like, there are so many issues.
I know.
When it came to retconning Blaine, like, to the high heavens.
Well, really, it sucks when you turn a one-off character into a main character without doing any sort of background work.
I still remember there was an interview with Darren and Harry Shum Jr. in it, and he found out via text message that the two of them were going to be regulars the next season, in season three. And Harry hadn't even heard yet. He heard in that interview from Darren that they were going to become regulars. Like, what is the system on this show?
I imagine maybe like carrier pigeons, or maybe a system of pneumatic tubes.
I love, maybe, by the way, that this is the stuff I retain. Like, I know. I have got no room for learning anything new in my life because I have so much Glee trivia.
I mean, yes, sometimes I just think about, we'll call them Clayne moments. And they live rent free in my brain instead of new things like the geopolitical issues.
I will say I had completely forgotten about Margaret Thatcher dog.
Margaret Thatcher dog. That conversation is so sweet.
Yeah.
It was the cutest.
That showed up in a lot of fan art too.
Oh yeah. It became one of the elements of the Clayne relationship. There was, you know, the Pavarotti and Margaret mm-hmm. Thatcher dog and all these tiny little, I ended up, one of the artworks I think I did at one point was like a patchwork quilt of all of the different elements.
Yes.
Of their, and Margaret Thatcher dog was on that as well.
I do love, because we talked about this a couple episodes back, and I wish I could remember what exact moment it was, but again, I have a sieve for a brain these days, but we had talked about when the episode gives you the moment of something that becomes integral to the fandom or a ship or a character, and then you see it in like its natural habitat. Yeah. You're like, oh, that's the line that everyone puts in fic forever and ever. He said it. Or like, that's the bow tie. That's the, you know.
It's just kind of moment when a character eats one thing or says that they like a certain kind of food, and then every single fanfic has them eating that food for the rest of time.
For the rest of time. was that Blaine's non-fat mocha?
Yeah.
No, Blaine gets a drip.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. I should know this. Yikes.
Kurt gets a non-fat mocha.
Non-fat, no-whip mocha. That's right.
Yep.
Yes. Like, and Blaine's
rent
like
free in rent my free. Head.
Blaine likes scarves.
Scarves and coffee.
Scarves and coffee.
I think that was one of the things that I loved as well about this particular episode was that it spawned the volume of fanfic, especially, like, I can't speak for everybody, but for me as well, like, the volume of fanfic that suddenly had Cooper in it that I was putting out at that point. And I had a lot of people come and say, can you stop writing about Cooper, please? He was only in one episode. And I'd be like, no, that's not going to happen.
Absolutely not.
But Glee slept on a lot of what they could have done. They slept so badly on Blaine's prom reference to having the crap kicked out of him. So many GIF edits of Cooper, it was shots of Matt Bomer from White Collar looking distressed. Mm-hmm. There were so many GIF edits of Cooper reacting to things happening to Blaine or stories. Like, and 99% of the time, the Fanon version was so much better than the canon that we actually, I mean, don't get me wrong, I love the canon that we got.
Yeah.
They could have done so much more, and it's heartbreaking.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking. I hate to even say this because it feels anathema to everything I stand for, but less canon Cooper meant they couldn't fuck him up.
This is very true.
And it's the Bert Hummel conundrum where Bert Hummel exists perfectly because he's only on screen for like 8 total minutes.
Yeah.
And as much as I want more Bert, if he was, I'm sure they'd make him a Trump supporter. You know what I mean? Like,
They would find a way to ruin it.
Yeah, like, just keep your hands off Cooper. I don't need him becoming a TikTok star. I don't need him. I'll write him winning an Oscar. I don't need you to do it for me. I got this. So,
yeah. I kind of love it when fandom adopts a character that doesn't get its just desserts.
Yeah.
Like, it's one of the reasons why, like, there was so much potential in certain moments in Glee, and there are whole TV series like Teen Wolf that could have been so much more, and their potential was massive, but it got completely squandered.
Mm-hmm.
And it's those shows where the fanfic is like the ripest.
Yes,
it's those shows where the potential was huge and massively squandered, where the fanfic is just spectacular. Because it just outstrips the show by a mile.
It does. It's the rage of bad writing creates better writing. It. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Fix It Fic is maybe the best outcome of a bad show.
This no longer belongs to you. This belongs to us now.
This belongs to us, and keep your grubby little paws off it. that is the upside. That doesn't mean I wouldn't have wanted at least one more episode. Why did he not come to the wedding? He could have made Blaine so uncomfortable. He could have done a song that was vaguely inappropriate at the wedding. Like
vaguely.
It was like a song all about him somehow.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. He would have been, yeah, okay, I can't think about this. I'm just thinking of all the ways Cooper could have been involved in their wedding.
Yeah. He could have, he would, you know what, he would have been the celebrant and he would have spent the entire time talking about himself.
Yes, absolutely. And that would have been okay.
I love it.
do we have any other plot issues that we have to iron out before we move on to our indices? Is there any plot left?
No, I think we covered pretty much all of it. There was, I think the one thing I will say is that, that Glee does have a habit, and I remembered it just watching this episode, of filling the episode with a lot of silliness and just undercurrenting it with one or two very serious things. So you get this contrast of Matt Bomer doing this acting masterclass and pointing and yelling and the entire NCIS scene. And in the same episode, you've got Quinn's wheelchair issues and you've got the fact that there's something wrong with Sue's baby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, oh yeah. That throwaway bit of like, oh, there's
that just casually, we're going to chuck this in here.
Yeah.
And it's something that in the earlier seasons, they did a lot better than because it got very heavy handed in the later seasons that they'd try to kind of juxtapose the drama with the comedy. And it's one of those things that they started out addressing things really, really well. And then they got to the point where and that's the meme. It became the joke that everybody's saying, please God, I'm so glad Glee's not running because they would have done a Hamilton episode.
Uh-huh.
That would also be about, like, you know, crime and things like that and racism.
Right,
but
right.
It's just, well, like, they got to the point where they made that was what the show was about in the end, was whatever heavy-handed issue was going on at the time. So I'm kind of really, really glad that we had that kind of golden period where they did that relatively well in the early days.
Yeah, I think we brought that up before, that the I was called it a monster of the week. The after school the after school special episodes were questionable. Like sometimes it would work out well and sometimes it'd be like the school shooting episode where you think, could you never do this again, please?
Oh yeah, they got very bad at it.
Like every once in a while you're like, God, you really tackled that well for you. And
no, it was that Chris Colfer is an amazing actor, full stop. And then they got cocky, like they were the ones making magic happen. And it's like, no, Chris can just cry on demand and is very genuine in the way that he acted that storyline because it was very personal to him. That's lightning in a bottle, my dude. You can't.
That wasn't your writing.
The school shooting episode is going to set me the fuck off. I can't wait till we get to it because I've seen it once and I've never watched it again. I was so infuriated. Mm-hmm. Can't wait.
Can't wait to hate this episode.
Worst. I think I hate that one the most. I hate that one in the breakup.
Really good comedy comes from pure hatred.
It does.
I think.
It really does.
You're able to tear things apart to a degree that you couldn't unless you really fucking hated the thing.
If you have any respect for it at all, you kind of like hold back. But when it's pure hate, then it's just choice. Favorite songs?
Oh. I gotta say, we got a snippet because at the time this aired, not only did I get Matt Bomer as Cooper, which was just a godsend for me, but I also got my favorite song being sung by the two of them together. Catch you hung up on somebody that you used to know. But you didn't have to cut me off. Make it like it never happened and that we were nothing. And I don't even need your love. But you treat me like a stranger and I feel so rough. No, you didn't have to stoop so low. Have your friends collect your records and then change your number. Guess that I don't need that though. Now you're just somebody that I used to know. Somebody I had an 8-second clip of somebody that I used to know.
Yes.
And that clip got played so many thousands of times on my computer, and it was 8 seconds long. I've got to say, it's definitely, context aside,
right,
somebody that I used to know, absolutely.
Is it just the 8 seconds, though? Like, not the whole song. Fuck that. No,
just the 8-second clip. That I still listen to that all the time.
Oh, I do too. Yeah, that's mine. For sure.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the best song in the episode. I think honorable mention to, is it just titled Up, I guess?
I don't know. I wrote down that song Quinn and Artie sang because I couldn't.
Scene is really cute. Eric Stoltz did a great job like juxtapositioning them on the roller coaster and then Quinn and Artie at the skate park, Crit Skip. Yeah. I thought that was a really fun way to put that together. And it was just cute and well done. It's a fun song to listen to. I think that's one that I, you know, listen to outside of like listening to Glee playlists. Mm. Like it's something I would like choose to listen to. It's cute.
So we have our Kevin McScale, which I feel is at a solid 5.
Solid 5 for sure. I wrote that down too.
Yeah. He's got
songs, he's got plot.
Yeah. A whole ass plot.
And he's honestly just he's really at his best, I guess, in this episode is what I'm trying to say. Like there's been so many episodes where they've done Artie so dirty. Mm-hmm. Like
agreed.
Even though he's a good person and he's really just so pure in this episode.
Yeah, definitely. Maybe it's because he's not trying to steal a girlfriend.
Oh, right. Like he's always
telling everybody they need to have sex so they can act.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well,
that's just common sense.
Yeah, everybody knows that.
How is our Klaindex?
Pretty damn high, honestly. If you took out the Margaret Thatcher dog conversation, it'd be like
0.
Two or like a 4. But having all that put into context, like I'm literally still bugging over how many actual good closure providing conversations we had in this episode.
Kurt was really understanding of what was happening here. I appreciate his like coming in with some spitting facts.
Yeah.
Clutch. I will say that it was one of the things for me.
Think you're both so handsome and good.
That just wrenched it right out for
me.
I
love that line.
Yes.
You can see in Kurt's face the entire time the threesome that is playing over in his head for that entire first scene. Mm-hmm.
Yes. It definitely is, and probably in Chris's too.
And we do not blame him, even remotely.
No.
Not even a little bit.
Can't hate there.
I feel like without a song from, like, because Blaine didn't sing to Kurt and Kurt didn't sing at all. So I feel like it's like maybe a 6 on the Klaindex.
For Margaret Thatcher dog?
Yeah, for just like,
yeah,
you're both so handsome and good. The locker conversation before that. And then Margaret Thatcher dog. Ugh, such an iconic part of the Klain canon.
Yes. So. And what is our coulda, shoulda, woulda?
Cooper should have come back ever for anything.
Yeah. Coulda.
He was like on a phone, like a video of him or something, anything.
I know. Anything.
Even just a photo of Blaine's locker.
Exactly. A photo. Oh my God. Yes.
One of the things that I like was one of my absolute favorite things in recent years because it just goes to show how much lingers. There was an episode of, I think it was, the show that Darren did for Ryan Murphy where he won the awards. I've totally blanked on the name of it. American Horror Story?
Yeah. Versace. American Crime Story.
Assassination of Johnny Versace. In an episode, and I think it was Matt was directing the episode, and there was a photo of the two of them hugging.
Yes. Yep.
Like 8 years on from whatever happened on Glee. And I saw the photo on my dash and just flashed straight back in time.
Yep. It's still
all of that emotion.
It still hits so good.
It does. It hits so good. Mm-hmm. And I think from the years and years of like fandom and from all the time we spent on the Ask the Ender Bros Tumblr, it was just, that was the height of it for me. That was absolutely top like heights of fandom fun that I had in that period. And it all comes down to Matt and Darren. And every time I see them together, I go straight back there.
All coming back. Yes, it does. It really does. And I'm saying that's the power of Glee.
Da, da, da.
The more you know. Big Rainbow. Yeah, it was
Big Rainbow. That's appropriate.
It's, you know, that's how it should be, is Matt Bomer riding a unicorn over a rainbow. Awesome. We should probably wrap it up so that people can leave.
Well, this was, like, I gotta say, I haven't had this much fun on a podcast in a long time.
Yes.
So this was awesome. Well, and it was a great flashback for me.
To be perfectly honest, as soon as we were like, let's do a podcast about Glee, I was like, well, obviously Gigi has to come talk about Matt Bomer. Who the fuck else is gonna do it?
I appreciate that I jumped straight to mine.
It did.
In correlation with anything to do with Matt Bomer.
You did.
That makes my life.
I love that this has been in the works for, like, years, apparently, Emily. Yes. That's so cool. I truly feel like I've been in the presence of legends here in this pod space.
You know what? You should.
I know.
You know what? You're right.
I say all the time that doing Glee on the Rocks is just, like, therapy and closure. Mm-hmm. So it's been...
Oh, God, it's so true.
It is.
I love that we're able to bring other people in who experience these things with us in big
closure.
And small ways to get also their therapy and closure. Yeah. It's pretty great.
You just got to work it out a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, there was right at the end of leaving fandom, there was, like, a really down patch, and it was sad because I'd had so much fun
mm-hmm.
in Glee fandom. There were so many amazing people, and I shouldn't have let, like, a few shitty voices drown that out.
It's so hard.
Like the power of retrospect, I wouldn't have left, honestly. If I had my druthers, I would not have left. And I only left because of a handful of assholes. But this was, like, crazy fun to go back and revisit that, and revisit the best of times mm-hmm. as well. As cheesy as that sounds, revisit what was the height of it for me.
Yeah, definitely. It was. It was for me too. Not that this isn't. it definitely it lives in its own little bubble of awesome. It's totally awesome. Even not quite right. Well, thank you to being on the show, and thank you, the show sounds so dickish. The show.
You didn't say my show, so that's not dickish.
Oh god, that'd be awful. Thanks for coming on my and thank you to the people listening. I hope this has also been a trip down memory lane for you, because it sure was for us.
Oh yeah.
I know. There's just, it's the good stuff, the juicy stuff. Yeah, so thank you for listening, and I guess you can follow us on social media. This is the part I don't like doing. social media and all the yummy places. And I guess that's what you missed on Cooper?